Good morning, everyone. Still morning. Meeting will come to order. There is a quorum. Members, we have minutes of the last two meetings before us. The minutes of the NCSL meeting of May 10th, where we had the presentation yesterday, and the minutes of the May 9th meeting. There's one item on May 9th. Representative Poppy should be listed as a member president instead of a member excused. Are there any Representative Carlson, would you make a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes with that correction.
Okay. Representative Carlson moves approval with that change. Any other corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes of May 9th and 10th, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Sorry, Representative Murphy, we're in the middle of the vote. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I was at that NCSL meeting yesterday.
Oh. And we have you marked down. Oh, we don't have you down. Okay. Well, we have you marked down as being excused. You want me to reconsider it and put you in the...
You bet.
As a change? Okay.
I'll move to reconsider.
Representative Davids moves that we reconsider the vote by which the minutes were approved. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Reconsideration passes. Representative Murphy moves that her name be moved to being present on the minutes of May 10th. Are there any other corrections, additions, changes to the minutes?
I wasn't here, but can I say I was here?
Yes. Nope, not today, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Bodine.
hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Whoa! Representative Aguinius.
Actually, I should be in the excuse column, not in the present column.
You should be in the excuse column and not in the present column. All right.
Okay.
We'll add that to the motion. Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, are we voting on two sets of minutes at the same time? Because I have two copies of the
minutes. We were voting on two sets of minutes at the same time,
okay.
May 9th and 10th.
Well, I have two copies of 10, but I don't have 9.
Okay, we'll get 9 to you. Any other corrections, additions, or changes? Seeing none, all in favor of, I'll move that the minutes as amended be improved. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amended minutes are approved. All right.
And that broke our record of one person being consistently making the motion for approval.
Well, I'm sorry, Representative Carlson. I just thought I had
I
to get
I'll
in there.
Survive, Mr. Chairman, yeah.
Get in there and have one at least this year. All right, members, we have one item of business today. That is House File 3959. Chair will move that House File 3959 be referred to the General Register. And then there is a DE amendment, the DE7 amendment. The chair will move the DE7 amendment. And that's a delete all amendment. And I think I would like to do one of the amendments to the amendment. And that's the A9 amendment. And what the A9 amendment does is it adds $2.27 million to the appropriation so that the amount of money that's being appropriated for the bill conforms to the fiscal note and the bill is fully funded for 2017. And so, members, is there any discussion to the A9 amendment to the amendment? See no discussion. All in favor?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson.
Is there enough money in the account, or how are we anticipating the revenue? Is that going to be from the fees? Because I think when I looked at the bill, it appeared that there was to be a transfer.
Yeah, it's a special revenue fund, yeah. Representative Carlson, but I can call on Representative Smith to talk a little bit more about it. There is... And I've talked to Mr. Marks about this, too. There is, it's my belief, enough money in that fund to take care of this appropriation.
Now, Mr. Chairman, if Mr. Marks says there is, I'll...
And Mr. Marks, can I recognize you to talk about the amount of money that's available here?
Mr. Chair, members, the account would have enough money in it. The kind of caveat to this is the Department of Public Safety would like to have two reserve amounts within this account, $5 million for 2 months of working capital, $5 million for building contingency. This appropriation will cut into that, into those reserve amounts. However, the department does not have access to those reserve amounts. This is a direct appropriated account, so the money is not available to DPS unless it's appropriated to them. So there is enough money that the account will not go negative with this appropriation. There would still be a balance of $4.6 million, but that's less than the $10 million they would like to keep reserved.
And Mr. Representative Chairman, Carlson. Marks, does that that would then build in or build up again as the revenue comes in from the licenses, or just how does that account replenish itself?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the money or the revenue to this account is from individual driver or from driver licenses. It's going to be marginal whether there's enough money coming in or not in the future. It's entirely possible the department may have to recommend a driver license increase to fund some of this, but we don't have long-term projections here. I don't have long-term projections. I have fiscal 16 and 17 at this point, and with this appropriation, we're taking about as much out as is coming in.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson,
the amendment then. The discussion of the reserve will probably continue as the bill goes through. But I was going to raise questions because I was aware that the $4 million didn't cover the cost, so at least we're covering the cost. But I suspect in conference committee or as it goes through the process, there will probably be some discussion then of the reserve level. So I would encourage support of the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Other discussion of the A9 amendment? All in favor of the A9 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A9 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Smith, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Can you explain to us the DE7 amendment?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, good morning. I have stated previously many times, privately and publicly, that in regard for our licensing structure to be compliant with the federal ID requirements from 2005, I think that a Tier 1 or one-track system is the best for Minnesota. After hearing a lot from the colleagues on both sides of the aisle, speaking to many people in the administration and also other people outside of this building, I am listening to what additional people would like to have, and I'm changing my bill to be a two-track system. So once implemented, you would be able to get a federal Real ID compliant license so you can fly, go into federal buildings, and go into military bases. Or you have the option of having the same license that you have today. That is one primary change with this bill, Mr. Chair. An additional change with this bill is we're making the implementation of the rules easier for the department based on some time frames. So those are in the bill as well. And we're keeping the implementation date of October 2016. That is a summary of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Representative Smith? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, is the department going to testify at all? Are we going to take any testimony?
Representative Drazkowski, I was thinking that I would have the department come forward, yes.
Okay, thank you. I'll wait till then.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Smith, one question that I've had coming in from constituents, or one concern, is that the so-called Minnesota-only license, that people are worried that that data would somehow be given to the federal government. But I understand that there's a provision in the bill to clarify all that. Could you just address that piece briefly?
Sure. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question, because there has been a lot of discussion about this within the building and also without. I've been contacted by some constituents and concerned people as well. And rest assured, the bill is written in a way where there's going to be no data. If you choose the non-compliant license, there's going to be no data shared with the federal government that isn't shared today. So everything will be the same.
Thank you.
Other discussion to the DE7 amendment? All right, members, in order to get the bill in shape then, all in favor of the DE7 amendment as amended to House File 3959, say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The DE7 amendment as amended is adopted. Discussion to the bill as amended, and I know we have another amendment, the A8 amendment, but I'm wondering, I know Representative Druskowski said he had some questions for the department. I don't know, is there a representative of the department here that can come forward? Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Can you state your name for the record?
For the record, my name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety.
And sir?
Hi, Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Meekin. I'm the CIO for Minute Services at the Department of Public Safety.
And do either of you have any kind of a statement you'd like to make on the bill, or would you like to just stand for questions?
If it's all right with the committee, we'd like to make a couple opening statements and then stand for questions.
Sure.
The department's position on the implementation of this bill is a concern. As was discussed earlier, the sufficiency of the funds to be able to move forward with this implementation does not exist in the driver services account. I know we provided some additional information, and we can provide some to explain the difference between the working capital funds that we have. But our concerns are around the amount of funding that's available. The other consideration is in our plan that we provided to the legislature in early April, we talked about the requirement from the card vendor to be able to comply with an October 1 deadline. They needed a decision and legislation to move forward by May 15th. From all indications, it doesn't look like we might make that deadline. And so that puts implementation or issuing of driver's license by October in jeopardy as well.
Are you saying that if it happened a week later than May 15th, that you can't possibly hit the October deadline?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going by what they told us initially when we put that report together, and I haven't had time to follow up. I just wanted to bring that up as a point of consideration from the card vendor's position.
All right. Representative Druskowski, then Hornstein. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Ms. Olson. First of all, Ms. Olson, I don't know if you have a copy, and I think a copy may have been passed out to members. If someone could give the testifiers copies, too, if the pages have them. There was a Real ID demonstration grant awards program that the Federal Department of Homeland Security enacted or carried out in 2008, I think I was told. Among that, Minnesota received $694,060. Do we know, can you tell us what happened with that money? What did the state of Minnesota do with that money?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we are researching that information right now. The question was brought up earlier today, and I don't have any knowledge of that just because of my position change. So we can get that information to you as soon as we collect that.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Ms. Olson. I appreciate that. I think members of the committee would as well. So, Ms. Olson, one of the concerns I have, and I think the biggest concern, and I extend my congratulations to the author for heading in a direction that doesn't force Minnesotans who want to drive into a situation that they have to be forced or adopt the coerced Real ID that the federal government has placed upon us with their regulations, but instead gives them some choice, and choice especially around their data, which is very important. With that, and given that, an important requirement here is that we maintain the integrity of their data. And I did hear you in a previous, in the Transportation Committee, say that the data from both the what is referred to in the bill as a compliant license, in other words, the real ID, and the non-compliant, which would be our regular driver's license that we have now, which I understand under the bill would continue ahead with very little change, although there is some change on the face of it, that the data from each of those two is stored in the same database. With that, we also have the bill. We have two other things. One, I have read where the federal government has said that states that enter into and become compliant with Real ID could also be, or actually, I think the language I read is the federal Department of Homeland Security said that all of the public safety data regarding driver's licenses in each of those particular states has to be shared with them. Now, first of all, I'd be interested in your take on that, whether that's true or not. And then secondly, I also would like to know what is the department's response in that area? What would your response be under the bill, the way it's been amended?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to your first point about the data being shared in the same database, that is correct. There would be no distinction between a Real ID database and a non-compliant database. It's similar to, for example, if you had a file cabinet and you kept your files all in the same cabinet, it's the same kind of concept. It's just that additional elements are added to each record that shows that there's more information, that this makes it a Real ID compliant card. As far as your subsequent question around sharing data with other states, we provide information to a national hub through AMVA. That's a hub and a messaging system that's available for all states to be able to comply with some federal regulations around commercial drivers, the Social Security requirement of verifying Social Security numbers, as well as the problem driver pointer system, to be able to make sure that the person that is coming to Minnesota and applying for a driver's license doesn't have existing violations in another state and has surrendered their license appropriately, so they only have one license and that license would be attached to Minnesota. That hub is a pointer system. That's all it does, is it takes the information that we gather and points it to the other states asking for a response back. The individual, when they come in, they'll state, I've had a license in, say for example, North Dakota and Iowa. We would know that when we went to the pointer system. They would call that out. They would simply ask the state, is this person a valid driver in your state? Is there anything that would prohibit the state of Minnesota from not issuing that license? We just simply get a message back, valid or not valid. There's no information in there that's stored. It's just simply a pointer system to give us more guidance to make sure that we are issuing an appropriate credential and that this person is eligible to drive. Under Real ID, those conditions would stay the same, and that's our current practice.
Mr.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Olson, regarding that, where did Minnesota government, where did the authority come for us to enter into this hub? Was it state law that enabled that, or was that simply rulemaking?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that came through the Driver's License Compact, which is part of state law.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Olson. So right now, as I understand the bill is written, There are prohibitions specifically for state government in sharing additional data that will be made available with the Real ID portion of the bill, with the new Real ID under the bill. And it says, and I don't have the part, I was looking for it in the bill, but I haven't gotten there yet. But it says, shall not share it with the federal government, shall not share the additional data with the Real ID with other states, etc. So what will be the response to the department if the federal government requires you to do that, given the fact that the bill and state law under the bill will say you are not supposed to?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if that bill passes and that's put into law, our position on this would have to come forward to the legislature and ask for the approval to enter into any additional agreements beyond what we're doing right now.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Olson, that's comforting. So what I think I heard you say is that should the federal government come forward after this is enacted into law, if the language stays the way it is today or similar to it, the prohibitions that Representative Smith has outlined in the bill, should the federal government come forward and suggest that we know you have this written in law, but we have a federal law that says you have to share data even though you have that prohibition in law, and they say, we want you to give us that data. You are telling me that you and the department and state government in Minnesota will exercise our 10th Amendment right and exercise the law as written in statute and will not give that additional data to them without permission in law from the legislature and the governor. Is that what I heard?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, from my understanding with the intention of the proposed bill, that prohibits us from going into any agreement and sharing our data outside of what we currently do, then yes, that would be appropriate.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Olson. So, but you said entering into an agreement, but governments don't always act according to agreements. The federal government may come forward, from what I have read in other federal documents, what I have read said to me that there is the possibility the federal government will say, give us the data. What happens and what is state government's, Minnesota state government's response if the federal government says, give us the data?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it is our obligation to uphold the intention of the legislation. That is the department's position. If that is the intention of this legislation, that is the position we would take.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Ms. Olson.
Representative Hornstein and Wagenius. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Olson. I just wanted to go back to your comment around the challenges that the department has with the deadline. And you had mentioned that in the Transportation Committee last week. What would be your preferred approach to this deadline? I know the Senate has, I think, a different date. Do you have advice or suggestions about, either a range of dates or a specific date that would be your preference?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I cannot speak to a policy recommendation. I can certainly bring forward what the concerns, more specific around the concerns, to provide you that information. And I believe Mr. Meekin is prepared to talk about those in more detail.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Then if Mr. Meekin can give us a little bit more insight into that.
Mr. Meekin.
Mr. Chair, thank you, members. What I want to talk about are just the risks that are involved in making these changes to our current, what we call our legacy system. There are just many risks which I want to outline, and they're quite high, each of them. The first one is just in hiring and finding qualified people to do this work. We have a very old, we have a 30-plus-year-old mainframe system. The number of people that really that are in the current workforce that work on this is very small. Just on our own staff, we only have two right now that do this work. Finding others to do this similar work out in the working community is a big challenge for us. We do have about so we have two staff and about four consultants that do this work for us now. And then bringing them in and training them, it's one thing to know the technology and to understand the technology. Then it's understanding the system. And the time frame, first the hiring or the procurement time frame tends to be quite lengthy in state government. That's just our reality from the process that we have in place to make sure that we follow follow the letter of the law on our hiring and do that correctly. And then the training of the staff, once we get them into the office and get them working, train them up on the new system, would also take a number of months just to do that. The hiring itself could take upwards of 4 months or 6 months to get the full staff. The training could take an equal number of months to get them productive in the environment. I want to move then and talk a little bit about the stability of the legacy systems. One of the key drivers for the new MNLAR system is to have a system that's flexible, that can take on new requirements, whether they come from the state government or federal government or other types of changes to improve business practices. This system that we currently have is quite unstable. Every time we go in to make any sort of change, particularly if it's a significant change like this, greatly risks the stability of the system. We have incurred a number of outages on the system, and unfortunately lost days of productivity because of changes that we've made to the system, say, over the last 5 or 10 years. Even as near as last year, we had a number of outage issues on changes that we made that weren't that complicated, and this is an incredibly complex change that we're talking about here. Along with that, we are in the process of essentially dividing the current system into two. It is one large system that does both driver and vehicle. For MNLARS right now, we are breaking this into two systems so we can turn off the vehicle side and bring up the MNLARS vehicle side. We simply cannot do the MNLARS work on this system if we are working on the Real ID side. That would bring too much change and instability to the system. So that would put a schedule risk on MNLARS of at least the time frame that we're talking about doing this work. So there we're talking about 6 to 12 months of delay potentially on MNLARS, time that we can't be working on MNLARS because we're doing this change. So each of those are very significant risks that we bear on this project, which make the chance of hitting the October 1, 2016 date a very high risk for us.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Mr. Meekin, you've outlined, I think, some serious concerns, and you know, you used the word just now, significant risks in meeting the deadline. And so, Mr. Chair and members, I think we have to listen to, you know, what the implementing agency is saying here about the timeline. And, I hope that, we can look at, I understand, Mr. Chair, that the Senate has a different timeline in their bill. And, I know we're not supposed to necessarily talk about the other body here, but Mr. Meekin or Ms. Olson, is that timeline more in keeping with something that's realistic for you?
Mr. Meekin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Hornstein. The benefit to the proposed timeline by the Senate is that will be incorporated into the new system development. And so that all effort put into that, one, as I said, the system is being designed to be more flexible, but also getting those requirements in early makes it a part of the natural development process for that, so we don't incur any sort of real material increase in costs to do that. And the other side of that benefit is all the changes that we make to the legacy system at this point would be sunk costs, which when we retire that system, when MNLARS comes online, those costs just would be sunk and go away. So we would be investing more into our MNLARS effort with that time frame.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We've just had a long discussion about protecting your data. Earlier, this committee had a discussion days earlier about cybersecurity when we were listening to the State Department's bill, and the governor requested a substantial amount of money for cybersecurity, and that wasn't put in the State Department's bill. Was any of that money that the governor requested, would that have protected your system?
Mr. Meekin?
Mr. Chair, members. The MIMRS project is fully funded for its development efforts. And as a part of that, we have included all of our security elements to that, the security controls we need to put in place. We are a part of the larger ecosystem of state IT, of Minutes, and we rely quite heavily on the data center, the statewide security services, the enterprise security office, right, the program management office. And so there is an interdependency there on that, which has been assumed into the building of our system.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, if we truly are interested in protecting people's data, I think we need to revisit the issue of funding cybersecurity. I mean, I hear the concerns, yet we are doing nothing that the governor requested, and that is very troubling to me.
Well, Representative Wagenius, the cybersecurity is issue are in the conference committee, and I'm sure we'll be getting further discussion. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're supposed to be talking about financing this legislation, but we've been talking about some policy, and I know, Mrs. Olson, you mentioned under the current compact in terms of sharing information with the federal government, what can you share with the federal government under the current compact?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when we share information, it's part of what we call the triple check program, which includes a problem driver, which is information to find out if this driver has any violations in another state. We generally send the name, the birth date, the social security number to make it easier to define who this individual is. For what we call SSOLV, but it's Social Security Verification System, that's a federal requirement. There, obviously, we share the social security number and validate that this individual is tied to this social security number. And then last, we participate in the Commercial Driver Licensing Information System. That's part of a federal requirement, and it's pretty much the same similar information: driver's license, birth date, social security number. Those are the three identifiers.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you opened the door to policy, so I'm going to drive right into it, pun intended. I have two questions, one for each of the witnesses there, and I don't care which one goes first. Apparently, Mr. Meekin, you deal with computers on a regular basis, and you speak computer. And you talk about stability at risk. So for the pipe fitter in me, could you explain what security at risk means? Are you going to, like, lose all my bad driving records from 30 years ago, please? Or are you going to not be able to, if a police officer stops someone on the freeway and they want to check whatever, you won't be able to serve them? What does security at risk mean?
Mr. Meekin.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. When we start to make changes, significant changes to the legacy system, we see really two types of errors. One is just the overall availability of the system. If we make changes to the code, this system is a large complex system. Sometimes we refer to it as sort of a spaghetti ball, because over 30-some years, there are lots of threads through it that are very interconnected, and not all are well documented or well understood. So when we go in and we start making changes to, say, a particular business process, that often has a knock-on effect to other parts of the system, and it might break those. So that affects production. Our state staff that work on it, driver's license agents, deputy registrars, this actually can bring the system down while we sort out that issue and bring it back to a state where it is in good running order. It also affects the ability for our partners, other in our partner community, including law enforcement, for them to look up information. It potentially puts that at risk. The second piece that is risky for us is that if we have a system that isn't working correctly, it can, in fact, cause damage to the data, right? So that something might happen to our record, and it might change, and the information that gets put into the record, because the business process part of it is broken, that information in the record might be changed incorrectly. And then, of course, we hope that we catch that very soon and are able to correct it, but those are the types of risks that I'm talking about here, just generally.
So, Mr. Chair,
apparently
my bad driving habits of 35 years ago aren't going to be gone. It's just my fine, whether I paid for my license or not. Damn. Ms. Olson, I have a couple of questions for you if you've got a minute here.
And Representative Mahoney, maybe just if we can keep it to a short couple of questions, because we do have session at 1, and
okay,
we've got
what are you collecting in the Real ID and sharing with federal government that is different? I mean, so just explain what you're collecting and what will be shared with the federal government that is different than what is today. Because I've read all this stuff, and not all of it, but I'm not sure I see what it is exactly.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the only real difference when we would enter into a Real ID situation is the requirement that Real ID has to verify immigrant documentation. That is an interface called SAVE. We've talked about that in our report as well. It's just verifying that documentations brought into us by immigrant non-citizens have truthful and accurate information, and SAVE provides us that mechanism. Otherwise, nothing else would change.
Representative Mahoney.
Nope, I will take the subtle hint from the chair and end my questioning.
Well, thank you. All right. Seeing no further questions for the department, thank you, Ms. Olson. Thank you, Mr. Meekham. And members, underneath the rules, we are required to take testimony on a bill. We have taken testimony now, and I know that there was at least one other person that had talked about wanting to testify, but given that we've got the session coming up and we have taken testimony, and given that this bill, and I think this is the fourth committee that this bill has been in, so it's had a lot of discussion, I think at this point I'd like to move to the A8 amendment. And so Representative Hamilton, I'd like to recognize you. Representative Hamilton moves the A8 amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Yes, the A8 amendment, what this does is it simply deletes Section 8 and then addresses the appropriation in Section 22. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm very passionate about this issue. I've been working on this issue for over 5 years. There's people that actually serve on this committee that have been working on this a lot longer than I have. And I've been asked, or in some cases even criticized, by not bringing this through what is considered the appropriate channels. And I said I would absolutely do that if that venue existed. We've been blocked from being able to bring this through a committee. We did have an informational hearing here a while back, and it was very refreshing to see the chamber come and testify in support, various unions, various ag groups. We had individual law enforcement officers, clergy. Many, many folks came together in support of this. And, until my position on this, until the federal government has the strength of the courage to actually do something about comprehensive immigration reform, I keep asking, what can we do as a state? That's why I was a strong supporter of the DREAM Act. I thought we should be educating our children. Education is never part of the problem. It's always part of the solution. And I think that when it comes to this particular case, I actually called back home to law enforcement, and I said, give me some advice on this. And they said, Rod, I'm going to ask you to take the politics out of it. It's about safe roads and insured drivers. And, you know, he said the harsh reality is that if this bill would actually pass, individuals would go through the training, they would receive a license, they'd purchase insurance, and they'd drive on the road. In the event this didn't pass, the same individual would not go through the training, would not get a driver's license, would not purchase insurance, and drive on the road. Mr. Chairman, I do have one question for the Department of Public Safety, if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Could the department come back up to the stand?
And as they're coming up, my question would be to the department, if we would delete this section, would it affect in any way, shape, or form the implementation of Real ID?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I guess I'm not quite sure what amendment or what information. Is it about the funding? Is that your question? I guess I don't have the exact information in front of me.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A8 amendment, it deletes Section 8, which would prohibit the department or the governor from rulemaking as it pertains to this issue.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't believe so. I can verify that information for you, but as far as I know, there's nothing in the Real ID Act that requires it.
Representative Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And like I said, I'm extremely passionate about this. I believe that we should have this conversation, not only here, but I also want to bring this in front of the entire body and have the conversation there and subsequently a vote on that. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to withdraw the A8 amendment at this time. I want everybody to know that it's going to be coming forth on the House floor.
Representative Hamilton withdraws the A8 amendment. All right. I don't see any other amendments, so discussion to House File 3959 as amended. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you very much, and I think just on the discussion of the A8 amendment and, you know, Mr. Meekin's testimony, I think there's a couple of critical points to make. I mean, and you know, Mr. Meekin's concerns are not a minor matter. If the implementing agency has serious concerns and is talking about significant risks and being able to make the timeline, I think, you know, we really ought to note that. And Representative Hamilton, I just really want to thank you. For offering this amendment and for your commitment to continue the discussion on the floor. I'll be supporting you. And I think it's what we heard from the department, that this is the language that you're trying to delete is just completely unnecessary to have in this bill. It has nothing to do with our ability to implement Real ID, and it shouldn't be here. We already have this kind of language and rules, and to put it in statute, I think, is completely unnecessary. So I just wanted to thank you and for your advocacy, and you know, because this language is in the bill, I'll be voting no, as I did in the Transportation Committee.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just also want to thank Representative Hamilton for bringing the question forward. And before he withdrew it, I was about to speak in support of it. And one of the several reasons was that when I was sitting where you are, we had an informational hearing right near the end of the legislative session. And several of the points that Representative Hamilton pointed out, and I'll focus on just one, was the public safety. There will be people that potentially would be unfortunately driving without a license. That means they would probably not have insurance. And that puts everybody at risk if there were to unfortunately be an accident. And so there's, like I was saying, several points that were brought up during that hearing, but one that I thought was very compelling was the public safety argument. So like Representative Hornstein, I'm pleased to hear that the discussion doesn't stop here, but that it's going to continue on the House floor, because I think that's an extremely important issue.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's be clear that the piece of this bill that is dealing with undocumented immigrants causes great harm. I have a significant population of immigrants in my district, probably one of the largest, one of the top 10 immigrant populations live in my district. And I live in an inner city district with a lot of traffic, a lot of people driving cars, some good shape, some not so good shape. Today, in today's world, they have the ability to have a driver's license and insurance. And if this bill passes as is, they will not have that ability to have a driver's license or insurance. And they're going to hit me in a car. They're going to hit some little kid. They're going to run into somebody's house. They're going to do something bad. Accidents happen every day. And unfortunately, the person who is the victim in the accident will have to pay versus the insurance companies or the perpetrator of the accident. That's the problem with this particular bill and the section that Representative Hamilton was trying to get rid of. So for that reason, I'll be voting no today, and hopefully when it comes to the House, I'll have a reason to vote yes for it. But right now, essentially what you're doing with this particular bill, Representative Smith, is you're putting people in my district at great risk, financial risk and physical risk. So I'll have to vote no on your bill.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Smith, can I ask you to make your closing comments?
Mr. Chair, members, this bill gives Minnesota citizens the ability to get a license that they can fly with commercially, that they can go to federal buildings, that they can go to military bases with, or it allows them to have the current license if they so choose. I appreciate your support for this bill. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, the chair renews his motion that House File 3959, as amended, be referred to the general register. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 3959, as amended, is referred to the general register. Members, I think we have posted the body camera bill for tomorrow, subject to us actually getting it from the Public Safety Finance Committee. There may be an amendment there that changes it so that we might not need to see it. But in which case, we would cancel it. So I guess I would just say watch the notifications on that subject. With that, if there's Representative Carlson. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I understand what you're saying, where that bill may or may not then be before us, but being that we're just a few days left in the session, what other bills would you anticipate that we'll be taking up in Ways and Means?
Representative Carlson, I know we still have the contract ratification bills, of which I'm the author of one of them, and we certainly are expecting that we will be taking those bills, I think there are three of them, up in the near future. I know there are a couple of other bills, Representative Fabian and Hornstein, I think, have been working on an environmental bill that I have been kind of holding off on because I think they were trying to work something out on it. That I'm hearing maybe is worked out. I guess I'm not sure if I'm recalling everything else. So we will have a regular meeting on Monday is my anticipation at this point at 10:15. And as to whether we would have another meeting earlier to take up any of those other bills, I guess I would just have to ask you to watch the calendar and announcements on the floor.
Mr. Chairman, if I may have a follow-up, sure. We all kind of know what the major issues that are out there, one of which is bonding, and the House has yet to take a position in the Capital Investment Committee on a bonding bill. Is that one that we might anticipate then coming to this committee during the session? Or would that be drafted and submitted some other way?
Representative Carlson, I guess I I don't know if I can answer that. Certainly, if it goes the traditional way, we would be seeing that bill.
Yeah, well, that's my concern. It should go the traditional way so that the capital investment members can have some input and that we can have some input in this committee as well. But that probably, from what you've described, potentially is the biggest issue that could come before us. And I've expressed my concern earlier about the House budget resolution and the number that that supports, which is $600 million. I would hope that as your caucus is discussing that bill, that you would take a second look at what you're proposing and perhaps amend the budget resolution so the Capital Investment Committee could provide for more of the needed projects across the state of Minnesota, of which both caucuses have introduced legislation that is important to the state of Minnesota and to certain regions of the state. I think your caucus is up over $3 billion in introductions. I'm not sure what our caucus is at, but I suspect it's a significant number as well. Not that we would ever be able to approach those numbers, but I think $600 million would be grossly inadequate to meet at least the basic infrastructure needs. So I'm anticipating, I'm hopeful that we'll see on the agenda amending the House budget resolution. That would be a good positive signal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Seeing no other questions, members, we are adjourned.